same voices today as how there was a labor shortage, there was a labor shortage then. And it quotes from the newspapers which carried the stories. I don't know if you ever saw that or not. And he has the story on our big strike where we established $1.40 in India, where he's got that stuff. He'll probably give you all that stuff. He'll be back pretty soon.
The AWC that was formed in 1959.
And it was set up in 1959 under the direction of Norman Smith. Mm-hmm. And I came in 62. But prior to 62, I was in the valley for 17 years.
No way, maybe
classroom by training, but I was representing the building trade for 17 years before I went to work for the national office. And then I left and went to work for the national office as the Committee on Political Education director of the 13 Western states, Hawaii and Alaska. And I stayed there for 12 years, and then when this thing bogged down, they sent me in to revitalize this and set it up. And Norman stayed until he was retired. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been in this valley a long, long time. I've been a member of trade unions since January 23rd, 1924.
When the AWOC was reorganized, it had gotten involved in a number of legal suits, one with DiGiorgio.
That was prior to my time.
Yeah, that cost them $86,000 eventually. Is there a decision by the AFL-CIO that they were going to try to avoid getting into those difficulties in the future?
Well, they always avoid unions the best you can. You really don't have a pattern. You try to avoid. We've been very fortunate here that we've been sued, but they haven't been able to win. You know what I mean? Like DiGiorgio sued us for $75,000. We beat that case. National Farm Workers was sued at the same time, but we beat that case. Dan Borden went in and beat the case. And the judge threw it out. In fact, he threw out all of the people that were arrested in contempt of the restraining order. But we haven't, since I've been here, we haven't lost any suits.
When was that suit with?
It was a couple of 3 months ago. It was down at the Helen by Fagan. I'd get them, but I don't have that kind of ambition today.
Can you tell us a little about the background of the strike in Delano? The AWOC had carried out a successful strike action in Coachella Valley.
Well, you see, the strike in Delano actually originated from the strike in Ireland. The strike originally was set up, and the demands was made in on the growers in Indio, in the Coachella Valley. And we struck there for the $1.40 an hour. Well, when we struck, we had a tremendous lot of people out. We used parking lots to meet him, and the employers would haul their workers from other places to break our picket line, and when they got there from other areas, they would go to the picket line with us. And that way we built up a tremendous, we had out about 1,600 people in the original strike, but it built up as the employers tried to bring their crews from other places and do the thinning job. So we were 9 days in that strike, and the employers that put a bunch of our people in jail. Some of them was charged with trespassing, assault and battery. In that town, if you put your hands up on the picket line, you're subject to arrest. See, that's the ordinance. It's not. It's never been taken to court. And when it come time for us to settle, They gave us practically 40 cents an hour increase. They were bringing Mexican workers into the fields from $1 to $1.10. The Filipino worker was inside the camp, was getting $1.25. And the Filipinos is the ones that decided to carry the strike because of the fact that they were bringing in anywhere from 15 to 25 cents an hour cheaper labor. So the Filipinos came to the conclusion that it was our members, that they had to do something in order to protect themselves. So we have a meeting, and I discussed this with the workers, and I told them the situation, the way that we were situated, and what to look forward to. But they decided we should strike, so when they put the strike vote, we struck. But when it came time to sign the contract, they had me in this position. I had a group of people who were receiving 40 cents an hour increase and 25 cents a box for packing. Well, the same people that worked there years for $1 and $1.09, $1 an hour and $0.10 a box. Well, here they were getting $1.40, 40 cents an hour increase, and 25 cents a box, 15 cents a box increase on the pack outs, which you can make yourself, if you can pack 4 boxes an hour, you're making yourself some pretty good dough, $2.40 an hour. See? And if you know anything about packing grapes in the field, why, you were sitting pretty. And I was confronted with two things, with either going to court with these fellows, some of them could have got 6 months or maybe longer, or a year in jail, because we had no chance in that community as far as any kind of a jury trial because of the connections that existed there and do exist today because of the long-time anti-union feeling that you have in that area. So what I did, I took it back to our workers and I said, here's what you can do. They'll drop all the charges against the boys that are in jail. I had them all bailed out. But I said, all the charges that were against the boys that were arrested, they will be tried. Now, if you want to go back to work without a contract, here's what they will give you. $1.40 an hour and 25 cents a box. Well, consequently, the majority of the workers were receiving 40 cents an hour increase right over the top. They wanted to go back to work. So when they voted to go back to work without a contract, we went with it. So these growers have interest in Arvin and the Llano area as well as in the Coachella area. So when we came over the hill and over the Tehachapi Pass into Arvin, they cut them back 20 cents an hour. Somewhere 30 cents an hour, $1.10, 10 cents a box. Now we struck another barbed first, and they pulled us quickly there. So just right now, I didn't have time to prepare for them because of the action. And we had about 44 arrested in one day for trading. And we bailed those people out. And the fight led on and on and on, and they kept putting our people in jail so that boys, we had a meeting and they backed up and figured when we moved into Delano that we'd prepare better. And having the Filipino community set up to where we could house and feed our workers. So when we put the demand on the 30 some growers that we have, I think there's 31 to be exact, for negotiate a contract calling for $1.40 and 25 cents an hour. And they refused to recognize our demands or our citations, and it left us in no position but to strike. So we struck on September the 8th, and we pulled out about 3,000 workers. We had 75 or 78, what we called foremen or crew pushers, come out of those camps. And then our boys sit down in the camp. And that's when they hired the Army Guard. That's when they started to turn the lights off. They didn't go to work. The first day they turned the lights off. The next day they didn't go to work. They turned off the water, the gas. They left them with nothing. And then they started to pressure them to move them out. But they couldn't move them on account of the law that takes 30 days to get them out. You see what I mean? Now, some of these fellows have worked 20 to 25 years for these people. That is the crew pushers, the key people. They're the ones that came out of the strike. Now, we were out there 8 or 10 days, and then the National Farm Workers, they came out on the 16th out of two fields. And that's the original setup of the original strike. We housed and fed those people put up from September until after the first of the year. We hustled the food and money and the place to feed the National Farm Workers. KWOZ, cave collections and various places where I went to took the people with me, and we would stand at the gates of these big operations, and there was one gate, $1,000. That was in the Southgate Chrysler plant. Local 216, we collected over $1,000. We took the Ford gate, $700-$800. We were over at the rubber. That's where we fed and housed those people. That's why we're able to carry the strike on today, is the money that's coming from the trade union movement into this situation. Is that what you want?
Yeah, that's amazing. Before the action in Arvin and the Coachella Valley, what kind of strike activity had AWOC been involved in, say, from when you arrived and took over in Washington?
Well, I've got a list of all the strikes. The AWOC has never lost a strike since I've been here. Every strike that we've been in, which is a record document that we have on our strikes, they were either broken by the federal government or by the California Department of Employment or a combination. You see, we have cases where we had strikes here where the heavy participation was carried on by the Vaquero. And this was one of the largest counties where they were used participants. Now, in order to break our strikes, they would take a contractor that maybe had 10 or 12 buses and he couldn't load them. And they would make an agent out of him. He didn't require a contractor license. He went directly to work for the farmer. And they cleared the beceros to the farmer. You follow me? That's how they broke many of our strikes. We didn't lose these strikes. They took the domestic workers' work away from him while he was on strike and used the beceros as strike records. We have each one of these cases documented. They're all put together in a packet like this. And all the strikes that we have, which are all records, they're documented like this. Only they're put to, this is the actual findings of this strike. This is the payrolls and the various things. Now, these strikes are put together in document form, and they've been sent out all over the country to expose the exactly what the how they used the Becerro to perpetuate a slave labor program with a starvation wage. And that's been one of the most effective things. It's why that we were able to craft this Becerro program. It's this document that I put together. I said it's all over. I got one handy here or not. I'll take a look and give you an idea.
David came in?
Yeah. Came in.
Dave there? No, he's not here. Okay.
Are these trade unionists from Malaysia?
Yes. No, those are from Vietnam and Cambodia. I forget, five or six different little countries that came here. But, you know, just a minute, I want to see if I can find that. Maybe you get an idea before I go on.
Hi,
Dave. Do you happen to have one of those stories on the document the strikes? I want the boys to look at it.
Oh, you mean that, I got one, I think, somewhere.
Yeah, I want them to look at it before I go any farther. They wanted to get some history on our strikes situations, and I told them that we haven't lost the strike.
Yeah.
That they've been broken by a combination, either individually or a combination of Department of Employment and the U.S. Department of Labor. And I wanted the boys to take a look at it before I went on.
Okay, yeah.
I think this one here, this is where I was on the air with the Herringer. I debated the issue with him, the Sacramento. No, but none of the jurors are debating me anymore. I don't know why. They won't get on the air anymore.
Is this a grower that you were debating?
Yeah, he is the vice president of the State Farm Bureau.
Oh, yeah,
Herringer. Yeah. But he won't come back. They tried to get him back as president. He won't come back. But this, if you look at this document, then you'll get it. See, this is the report that I sent into Washington in protest of the Becerra program. Yeah.
Document.
See. That's all of the cases, the strikes and the wherefores.
And the reversals by the Department of Employment telling that there's no longer a strike existing because the people left their jobs and went to work for other employers, or they made agencies out of the contractors so the contractor no longer had a bona fide labor dispute with us because he would argue that I'm no more a labor contractor, I'm an agency, I'm an agent. I do not carry the payroll anymore. The grower carries the payroll, and he pays the people. All I'm doing is housing and feeding them and transporting them to the job. I'm just an agent.
So you see, when that happened, you couldn't get any domestic workers in to strike the grower. See, the grower uses the employer, his employer, or his supply of labor. He used the contractor, which they all use. Contractor plays a very important part in this business. Much more important than people realize is because the average farmer doesn't have a crew of people over 60 days, 99% of them, only the big farmers. So you have to have some kind of pressure on the contractor or you're dead, because when you strike the grower, he doesn't hire anybody but the contractor, you follow me? So what they did to us, they used these same contractors for 5 or 10 years, we'd strike them and tie them up. Then the government would circumvent us and send the Braceros directly to the grower. When the year previous, you as a contractor, you housed and fed all of these Braceros for the grower, and you were his source of domestic laborers. In other words, you had to make your daily, what we call pickup, your daily recruitment for domestic laborers, according to Public Law 78. But when we struck these guys, they forgot about that. They'd circumvent us. So this is a story that tells us each one of the cases documented. That's what you want to be.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's the story. That's a valuable little book there. I don't know if we got any more of those, have we?
Maybe one more. I can only one let you look at it if you send it back.
Sure.
But
this will give you a tremendous history. This story right here.
You see, we had a labor dispute with the Stock and Growers Association, and we put a picket line on a new building out there, and the building trades wouldn't go through, so they got a restraining order against us picketing. The show caused why we were picketing, because they maintained that they were not a bona fide labor contractor. They were just an agency set, you see. So they took us to court, and we beat them. And the judge ruled that they were employers in every sense of the word, inasmuch as they put in their disability to the state for the workers. They also filed the Social Security with the federal government for all the workers that they hired.
And made the payroll.
And made the payroll.
Paid the gas bills on the truck.
But T-Bird still didn't reverse its former decision. He still maintained they were agencies, even though the judge in the San Joaquin County concluded that they were bona fide employers. So you might have another copy of that you can take with you, but I'm up long. I'm just getting so scarce of those things. We passed so many of them out, and we didn't get them back. And it takes a lot of work to compile some more of them.
That's a perfect story, though, that these boys should get one if you're going to write a book. Because you see, in there, you also find in there, where we took the Becerro in one field, we had domestic working beside him. The domestic received $1 an hour, according to the Public Law 78. The domestic workers, they didn't receive $1 an hour. They couldn't make $1 an hour on the piece rate. Federal government went back and collected the difference between the piece rate and the boy, what they were able to do on a piece rate price and $1 an hour for the Becerro. But the State Labor Commission moved against the domestic work. Now that's the story. That's the kind of stuff you want, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
See, I'll show you this case here. If you look in just a minute, I know it's inside now. These are the things I'm sure that if you really want to document something, see, each one of these cases, they're self-explanatory. And also you'll find in here is where only once, if they ever called on AWOC, the Department of Employment for People, we put on the drive form in Sacramento. And we were able to put so many people on the street before our contract on with our radio was completed that they had to stop because they didn't have the buses to take care of the workers. That story's here, too. Every one of them, and it's no trouble to go through them because there's a cover sheet on each one of them that tells you how it's done. Now, if you're going to take one of those, why, you won't have to because they're all a cover sheet to tell you about each story. See, like here, LaDuca and Perry attaches a record of LaDuca and Perry for the history of this case as follows. March 30th and again on April 2nd, state investors on May 7th, decision rendered by July 17th. And all this stuff is documented.
Did you not, here's letters from the state and the federal government, own letters, and also their wires. There's nothing different. It's nothing we wrote, it's our own.
It's a record compiled of how captive labor was used to beat down the forces of the domestic farm worker in here. What else do you want to know?
Yeah, there you can tell us how things look to you for the success of the strikes in Delano, and then what you think the longer-range strategy is going to be.
Well, the strike in Delano is just simple. It's just a matter of time and money now.
Do you think the strike is going to win?
Well, you can't lose the strike in Delano. The only way they can lose the strike in Delano is if they walk away and leave the people. You have the people. They're a hardcore group of people. They've been taken care of. As far as AWOC members is concerned, there isn't one of them lost his car. Taxes has been paid, the family's taken care of, the seamen is being fed, we're receiving money from all over the United States, we're paying those strikers whatever we can possibly pay. We don't have any hardship cases. If we do, we immediately take care of them if they're sick. So in the case now of this particular strike, in my opinion, is a matter of time and money. How long the grower can take it all depends, you see. You're taking on an industry that does $3.5 to $4 billion a year, one of the largest industries in the state of California, and it's not a group of people that's going to lay over and die for you because of the fact that every one of them is a law-abiding citizen. Now, every one of them hasn't violated any laws because every piece of legislation is written and has become a law. And on the statute book, there's an escape hatch for the agriculture producer to escape. See, he doesn't have to pay full Social Security. He doesn't pay any minimum wage. He doesn't have to pay any unemployed insurance. And all of these laws, you have 9 good laws in the state of California as far as covering labor and management. But every one of those laws is an escape hatch. You have your National Labor Relations Board, but there's an escape hatch for the farm worker. That is the farmer himself. So what you have to do here is as simple as falling out of that chair. It's like it was in the early 30s, 20s, and clear up until the enactment of the National Labor Relations Act. Because all the way you're going to beat this farmer is by economic pressure. And that calls for personal sacrifice. It calls for boycotts. And it calls for the respect of a picket line. And that's all that you have. All you have is what we say is the working man's economic pressure. In other words, these workers are out in the jungles. They have nothing, no law, anywhere to go. Anything that the farmer does, he has to do voluntarily. But you see, they haven't violated any laws. Morally, they're wrong. But they don't have to pay a minimum wage. When they bring in foreign labor, but here's the sad part of it. You see, when they sign an agreement with the foreign workers program, they have to guarantee 75% of the work time. If I come up here on a contract, say, under the, even under Public Law 414, excluding the Public Law 78, which is dead, but under the Immigration Law, Public Law 414, I sign an agreement with the Mexican government before the people can leave. And when they leave, they're guaranteed 75% of their work time, if it's 120 days. They're guaranteed $1.40 an hour. They're guaranteed a 6-day work week. They're guaranteed a housing. They're guaranteed transportation from the time they leave the center in Mexico until they get back to that center. You follow me? Mm-hmm. They have insurance and travel. And while they're here, they're covered with the workman's comp and so on and so forth. But they can't lose because they'll get 75%. Of $1.40 an hour for every hour they're here, whether they work or not. And after they're here 60 hours, they don't pay any board. They get free board. You follow me? Now, none of these conditions has ever been offered to a domestic worker. A domestic worker, he has no guarantee of nothing. He has to furnish, in most instances, furnish his own transportation. He has to hunt his own housing. You follow me? Now, those are the things that the domestic worker has to compete with. Under Public Law 78, he had all of these things to compete with. You see what I mean?
Is there any chance of getting the State Collective Bargaining Act in the next year?
There should be a chance in the state of California with the reapportionment. And the bulk of your legislators is going to come from metropolitan area. You'd have a much better chance. I hope to see that they have the same here they have in Hawaii. You see, they have a Norris Boatti Act in Hawaii. They have a minimum wage and full Social Security. They have one of the greatest contracts in the world for agriculture workers in Hawaii. I think it's $1.87 or $1.97 is a starting rate. They have the welfare plan. They have dental. In the welfare plan, they have the glasses included, and the health and welfare covers the whole family. And their top pay is about 25 something a day. And the same people in Hawaii that has the contracts are big operators here. For instance, the CalPAC, California Packing Corporation. They have a big cannery. They have tremendous pineapple fields in Hawaii. They have signed agreements in Hawaii. And here, they have cut over 5,600 acres of peaches in one track, right here in Merced County. Out here on the island, they got over 3,000 acres of asparagus. And I don't know how many hundred acres of peaches they have in the north, just in this vicinity. And throughout the United States, they have tremendous holdings. They showed about $18, $19 million profit last year after taxes. Now, an industry is in a bad condition. When it brags about taking $3.5 to $4 billion worth of turnover in the state, that's a lot of money. But still, they can't afford to pay like the rest of it. They expect you and I, and own our palaces and our little homes, to come up with the taxes in order to subsidize these farm workers who are with no work in the winter. You take most of your counties, you take, for example, this county here. Our budget runs about 19 to 20 million a year. You will find that's the welfare. On our welfare rolls, 85% of the people that participate on welfare are family farm workers. Fresno is even a higher rating. They have about $24 million and about $22.5 to $23 million is set aside for welfare, and about 87% of them. Stanislaus County is right today is one of the highest in the nation because of the influx of people. They have increased about 12%. So those are the things that that you can't get across to the public. We couldn't, but we are now moving into that field of an educational program, because you can't go out here and take a switch when you go bear hunting and expect to win, because when you analyze this industry, you have, I say, the best PR man in the country. When it comes to doing a job of brainwashing the public, they've done a tremendous job. They've conditioned the people and actually made lots of people believe that you can't harvest this crop without the federal program. Many of the trade unions today is that it's just started to be convinced that you can harvest this crop without the foreign labor. And that's the problem that we have had, is to convince the public, because you see, they had a free reign, we'll just say since 1949. They had free reign. Nobody bothered. Prior to that, all of the early strikes, the 30s that we had in this area here, people shot, killed, right here in this town, right here on this island, there was five Filipinos they never did find in the strike out here in 1948. The DiGiorgio strike in 49, the Tagus strike in 36. I can name a lot of them. Now, the cannery worker, you see, was in no better shape, actually, than the farm worker is today, until we had the riot here in 1938. And there was three people shot out here that morning. And we had enough pressure and enough people that they couldn't get through. That afternoon, it was a contract negotiated in the governor's office, Merriman's office. That's when the cannery worker was organized. There's a picture there. The first contract was ever signed for the Teamsters and the cannery workers. That was signed, that's me standing over in 1947.
Is it possible to get a copy of this picture?
Why, did you want it?
Yeah, this would be something that would be perfect for that book.
Sure. Can I give you the names of those people?
Who's this guy, Tommy?
That's Heiser. Heiser. I was signed for the Flotil Canyon. The guy's name is Heiser.
Do you know his last name?
That's his first name. No, he was representative of the Flotil Cannery and signed a contract for him, and that was in the attorney, our attorney's office, Frank Damrell.
Heiser.
Heiser, sitting there signing.
Is that his first name?
No, that's his last name.
Last name,
Heiser. He said
you.
I don't know how to spell it, but I'll get the right spelling for him.
I'll
get all that spelling.
No, okay, for me. Mr. George Mark.
International representative.
Now, and this is Toriano. What's his first name? Toriano.
I'll have to get that too.
Toriano. T-O-R-R-E-N. This is Frank Damrell, the judge now. Frank Damrell.
He was the attorney.
He was the attorney for the
For my building trades. Stanislaus. He was attorney for the Stanislaus. Merced, Tuolumne, and Mariposa counties.
I got a negative for that.
We can get a picture off.
Oh, great.
Right. Right.
We have a bag.
Okay. I'll get a bag and then larger.
Yeah.
But I got to have a bag.
Oh, yeah. All this.
Well, we'll get you the right names on that for you. See, that was after the cannery workers was originally organized, and they had federal charters. And then that's when the Teamsters took over.
AWOP recently teamed up with the Teamsters.
We had a working agreement that went into effect in August of last year. we had a very sound working agreement. I don't know if I have a copy of it or not.
I've got one somewhere you want to give to
him? Yeah, I want him to have a copy of it.
Okay. That's in the Porterville area?
No, that was the statewide area. I might have it here. But that's no longer in existence. We were told to cease to work with it, which was a big mistake. The Teamster will organize a camera worker now. I mean, he'll organize the field work. You couldn't stop him. It was only through friendship, I think, that we were able to, my long standing was to keep him from moving into the field. See, a lot of people don't understand that the Teamster's in a position to take over the field work anytime he wants, and he's got all the, there's all the processing, all of the camera work. In my opinion, he's too powerful. See, Christ, he's got all the cameras in the state organized.
The cycling house workers don't have a very large portion of the cameras.
Cycling house workers are just like everybody else. They have to depend upon the wheel. And that's the people. What the hell can you do if you don't pack? You can pack all you want. If they don't pull the sound of which way, they don't pull it to you. And when you start fighting the Teamster, you're whistling Dixie in the yard. You want some of this stuff? You might want some of this stuff. You want to take it?
Sure. Just all this thing.
Yeah. Boy, I'll get you a lot of this stuff. This is my, where I'm on the, give me that back, because this is the stuff I use when I'm before the colleges and places. Dave, what can you line up for these boys? Take this stuff and see what you can find in there that you have without giving my pack here that I use in when I'm speaking before the people. Take a look in there and see if you can line up some of those things for us.
Okay.
For
my
boys. Here.
I got that telegram somewhere in my files too.
Yeah.
But I'll have to
get it. Yeah, get them on. You see, this is the thing that always worried me, was a lot of hard work could be done. And you get this to the point to where we have it now, but you always have that threat of the Teamster on your back. Because if the Teamster and the longshoreman didn't respect the picket line, he'd be dead, right? This Rampart magazine, these boys were in here with me for most of the stuff here he took. It was just like you did, only he took notes. And this stuff. Very nice guy that wrote that book. And he was having a hell of a time here. And he tracked me. So a friend of his called me up and I said, sure, I said, I'll talk to him and tell him as much as I know about this as I can.
I was just about to ask you about the current agreement with the Teamsters in the Porterville area.
Well, you see, what we have is, he's going to give you a copy of the date last August. And that's when the Teamsters agreed to go all out to support me. In fact, they went so far that we got an unfair labor charge against us for closing down this canyon. You're the first one we signed in 1946. The order here is on the wall. I tried to take it down now. Where they got the unfair labor charges, but we're able to beat it. We had to post that notice that they went to shut the canyon down with the picket line because they had picked the fields. See, that was a case of where we had union contracts and the Vaquera Ranch laid off the union people and applied for Becerros while he had the union people in. He put the Becerros in there and we pulled the people and they froze the Becerros behind the picket line and picked the tomatoes. That's on the Fukuhara Ranch last year. That's how far the Teamsters went with us. Now the pact that we had in the pact that we had in Visalia was no different than the pact we had last August. We just merely went into work down there. Now we got some stuff. I think we got some literature on that. Pictures of our meetings, full house, and various places. But as today, that pact of judgment is non-existent.
It went out of business?
No. Well, they stopped us from working with them.
The
National AFL Director, Mr. Kircher, told us that we couldn't work on that type of setup because of other locals and other internationals in the AFL-CIO had the same jurisdiction, see, the package had.
In Porterville, though, you're working with the Teamsters and an agreement that the Teamsters will organize the...
We were. Mm-hmm. That they would organize the sheds and we would organize the fields. They would inspect our picket.
Yes, but that agreement doesn't exist
anymore? That doesn't exist anymore because of the fact that the AFL has people inside the butchers and the packing house workers. They have shed workers. So we were told not to carry on with this agreement, so we're not doing it now.
Okay.
So we're now at the mercy of the Teamster. Well, if the Teamster wants to take the field, how are we going to stop them?
You think the Teamsters will?
Well, I don't
eventually.
I don't know. I couldn't say that. I don't know what the Teamster. He hasn't for all these years. He's had the Canadians organized since 1947, but he's made very little attempt to organize the fields.
I remember one Teamster official, it was Ted Gonzalez, was asked about organizing farm workers, and he said, we're not interested in farm workers. Even if we wanted them, we couldn't keep up with them.
He's with the canning workers locally here, and he did that. Ted, I know he was. But I don't know what they'll do. I know they're going to organize. They're organizing their sheds down there, he tells me that. Those ice houses.
Well, are they starting a statewide campaign, or is that...
No, I don't know if any other campaign what they had there with us. That's all. They gave us a good break in there. We were able to establish the price of oranges that never was heard of in that area this year. Without that, we couldn't... Our boys couldn't have gotten the price. It's 38 to 40 cents a box for oranges. Same box of oranges we paid for 18 to 20 last year.
Well, AWOC has probably done more than any other unionizing campaign.
Well, I'm not a type of Weisheimer or a guy that likes to blow, but I think that Norman Smith, who originally came in 1959, did more for the agricultural workers than any man that I've ever met. And I think that Norman was a tremendous person. And I think that, in fact, I know that more unionized the farm workers. I say that because I'm not trying to be a Weisheimer or anything, but I think that just dues is for Norman. I've been in this valley a long time, and I've seen him come and go. I took my building trades back to strikes. I took my building trades and shut down the tomatoes so they could get 23 cents a box in the early days. I hauled thousands of pounds of food to them in the Georgia strike. I got pictures of where we had 44 tons of two from the building trades of Delamita and my council unloading the stuff just with the two trips. The Teamsters donated their trucks and the trailers where we loaded the stuff, the bacon and the butter and the tomatoes and the beans and the peaches and the asparagus. We got out of the canneries and hauled down there on the big Delamo strike. And I've seen them all, but I never seen anyone that I could say, and I've been around there a long time, that done the job of exciting the people and educating the people, their rights as far as farm work was concerned, to compare with Norman Smith.
What will be your strategy in the future as far as organizing?
Well, there's only, as long as you're in the jungles, there's only one strategy, that's a picket line. See, because in this field, nobody will talk to you until you can tie them up.
Do you think it's going to be more large strikes, or will it go back to smaller strikes that will last in, you know, maybe just a few days or a week?
Well, you see, we never have a small strike. We've never had a small strike. We've never took on anybody that didn't have anywhere from 12 to 15 buses. Thousands of acres. We struck Calpac out here. The first one we struck the Zuckerman, the largest. We still got a strike with him. The largest individual, one of the largest individual growers in the United States as an individual. He has from 1,000 to 1,500 workers. You don't hear anything about that because the civil rights wasn't mixed up in it. See, if the civil rights wasn't mixed up in the Delano strike, you don't hear anything talking about trade union now. It's all civil rights, discrimination. But you haven't got an effective story on a trade union strike down there. Can you show me one?
I guess the public has...
See, that's the thing that a lot of people overlook in the Delano strike. A lot of people don't agree with me. But your eye is clear off of the trade union dispute. They're trying to bring it back now. But the publicity was gathered on that strike. I doubt a lot of it because of the fact it was a civil rights program, and we didn't have the civil rights. We had a trade union movement strike, and that hurt them. See, when you have people in the fields working, and you have people on the outside picking, never was in the field before, I never hit a lick in the field, telling these people to come on out, they're wrong. Why? It isn't my